Welcome to the Women and Wealth podcast with Esther Szabo. Esther is a respected leader in the field of personal financial advice with over 25 years of experience. After going through her own significant and challenging life-changing events, she overcame fear and self-doubt to launch her own successful advisory firm. Now Esther is ready to share her practical and personal experiences to help other women clear their hurdles and brave life's transitions. In this way, she inspires women to lead fulfilling and confident lives.
Hello and welcome to Women and Wealth with Esther Szabo from Gates Pass Advisors. Today I'm excited. Esther has a fantastic guest, and that is Joan McCreary. Joan is a certified professional organizer and owner of JMPO, a successful estate and home organizing business based in the San Francisco Bay Area. She specializes in working with the chronically disorganized, seniors, and estate clearouts. And Esther, I'm one of those three. I can tell you right now, I'm one of those three, and I'm not old enough to be a senior, and I don't have
an estate.
That's what I was going to say. Well, everybody has to.
Okay, so you're 30%. Yes, I know. Yeah. It's so hard to stay judiciously organized. I know two people who, when I go in their house, I'm just like, how do you do this? There is nothing out of place at all. But I think they are way at the bell curve. So,
yeah. I think most of those people have like the closet to Narnia and they just shove stuff in there, you know, because it's bottomless and then they just take it out when we leave.
Yeah. I just have a closet that I shove stuff in, but it's not, doesn't go anywhere. I've tried. So, yeah, Eric, thanks. I am so excited to have Joan on today. I've shared with her multiple times. I love professional organizers. I so appreciate the skills that they bring. Mm-hmm. And I have lots of questions for you, Joan. And so we're just going to get started right away.
Let's do it.
That sounds great. Well, welcome to Women in Wealth. And if you could just start with, how did you come to professional organizing and launching JMPO?
Wow, it's one of these stories that's very circuitous. So I'll try to make it abbreviated in some way. But I have a background in project management in a startup environment, wearing lots of different hats and engaging in lots of different skill sets and professionals. And after my job was gone, basically the company got bought out, I decided to become a stay-at-home mom, take care of my kids, and ended up volunteering 30 plus hours a week in the school system before I realized I really needed adult engagement, not just hanging around kids. So looking for something that shared my administrative skills, my organizing skills, and my newfound understanding of the differences between how people learn and engage with their surroundings, something that I actually developed in the school setting. And organizing came very naturally after I identified my passions and my skill sets. And working with people who were struggling with their stuff has become one of the most rewarding endeavors in my life.
I can completely understand how it could. Now, I have found when I have suggested organizers to my clients, because so many, when you ask a client for their financial records, now, how much are you spending? Just give me a ballpark. Oh, that's a tough question to answer. I'd like to see a copy of your estate plan, a copy of your insurance documents, things like that. It's so challenging, and let alone the other stuff that comes. And most of them, I would say, it's a pretty common experience. They look at me with terror in their eyes. They don't want someone to come. The thought is, someone's going to come in and judge me. I'm embarrassed. I will clean up first. And they're just worried that the organizer will come in and judge them. And so, what are you doing? And just want to chuck it all out. Can you talk a little bit about how you build trust with your clients that they're, you know, in terms of the approach?
Right. Well, what you describe is so normal. And I think one of the important things at the beginning of any client engagement, even before they've hired us, is to normalize their situation, to make people feel they're not alone in feeling uncomfortable with someone being in their space and seeing their true living style. I tell people, when I come over, whether it's for an assessment or for a session, I don't care if you've made the bed or cleared the cereal dishes or swept the floor. nobody has time for that when they're expecting somebody in their house. If they also have a job and kids and animals in the house, there's other things that are maybe more pressing than doing the dishes first thing in the morning. So we normalize everybody's situation, and it's very important for us to build trust straight off the bat. We have in our client agreement a statement about the confidentiality, that whatever we see, learn, or understand from the client is their information. It is not to be shared. So that includes the state of their home, how full their closet. Their home may look pristine on the outside when you walk in, Esther, but like Eric says, you know, they may have that closet from Narnia, which is just stuffed. You don't know what the drawers look like, what it's like under the bed or behind that closed door. And that's their business. So we do assure them that this is a no judgment zone. It's a no-tell zone. And you know, to get people to relax and trust us, that at least we can share in confidence and without needing to worry too much about the uncomfortable emotions that come along with.
And I know that one of the things, the techniques that's really helpful, because this is all quite overwhelming, I think, for people. And it certainly has been in my life too. I think one of the techniques is to, I mean, if you can tell how to go from overwhelm to manageability with this.
Yeah. Overwhelm is like that elephant saying, you know, how do you eat an elephant? Right. One bite at a time. Hopefully we're not actually eating elephants, but we do have to deal with our stuff, our overwhelming space. And it is really just one step at a time. A lot of times we'll get ready to start working and a client says, I just don't know where to start. And I said, well, it doesn't really matter. It's all got to be done. So let's just put our right hand out, put it down and see what it touches. That's where we're going to start, or take a step forward. What's right in front of us. And it sometimes comes down to, let's just look at 12 square inches, whether that's on the floor or on a surface. And that's what we're going to clear. We'll start with a very small space and celebrate that success. Other people do not have quite that density of clutter, so it may not be such a small thing, but we do want to start with something that's going to give us a visual impact, to give us that satisfaction and motivation to move forward by being able to see that, yes, we can make a difference in our space.
And how do you deal with this thing of concern that you're going to march in and just say, oh gosh, you're keeping that? Why are you keeping that stack of newspapers? You know,
right?
I mean, how do you deal with that concern of you're going to just come in and override and chuck stuff?
Well, one thing I really want people to know is that when you work with a professional organizer, it really isn't about what the organizer wants or thinks you should be doing. It really isn't. That's not, most people don't say, I have no idea what's good or not, although some people do, and say, you know, I want you to come make the decisions. Most people, they have feelings about their things. They already have imbued some value, whether it's emotional, historical, family links, financial investment. They've imbued that value into their items, and we have no idea what that is until it's shared with us. So setting a goal is really important for the client to do, and we're going to be working with them to meet their goals, just like you do with financial investing. Mm-hmm. They don't know the steps to reach that goal, but you do, Esther. And it's the same with their space. They don't know the steps to reach their goal of having clear counters, of having maintainable, clear floors, but we do. And so we can guide them by asking the right questions and learning what's important to them and proposing options rather than prescribing action, right? So we want them to have a choice in what to do with this. Is keeping this in sync with reaching your goals? Is this going to help you reach your goal or prevent you from reaching your goal? And those are the types of questions that I explain up front. And I think most organizers do with their clients is let the clients lead. And we're really just kind of there to guide them. We're side by side guiding the client through good decision making.
Yeah. So you're not coming in to say, okay, we're going to make this space how I would want it in my home. We're
exactly
going to make this space what you want it to be for yourself.
Right. That's so true, because who's going to live in that space? It's not going to be me.
Yeah. And it's similar, too, to what I say. I mean, we all have our biases, but it's so important for me to get to know my clients. Otherwise, I'm going to project onto them what I think they should do and have. And I'm so grateful when clients share with me. I had a great conversation with a client yesterday, and they were like, you know, it would really help me if I saw XYZ. Great. Absolutely. We actually got off the call, came back on the call. 15 minutes later, they had XYZ. And so,
yes,
you know, rather than assuming, oh, well, they seem to be okay, I guess they're fine. And then when you find out what they need, oh, thank you. That's helpful.
Exactly. That's such a great example. And I think that what we're finding is that a good advisor in any scope or in any application will do those things, will listen and provide the tools and explanations that meet the client's needs, meet them where they're at. Because just like my clients all have varying levels of clutter and clutter tolerance, clutter situations, and clutter goals, your clients all have different levels of financial know-how and different skill sets and different financial goals as well. Yeah. And this applies to just about any industry.
Yeah. And so one of the things I get concerned about is we talk a little bit about clients who are getting more elderly, and it's so important to evolve. Everyone wants to stay at home as long as they can. And one of the most important things to enable someone to do that is to eliminate fall risk, right? Not tripping.
Exactly.
Falling. So many seniors get injured right in their own home. My clients have two where they trip, they fall, and they're off to assisted and then skilled nursing. And so as you go into homes, what I'd love to hear about is just supporting that, because that's a touchy topic also.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. I love working with senior population, and I really love working with the children of older adults, because everybody's trying to navigate this new stage of life. And yet, it's really not new, is it? People have been getting old since people have existed. Right. But it's always new to us. And what younger people don't understand is the perspective of the older adult. There's a wonderful book that I recommend called How to Say It to Seniors by David Soley. Mm. And if anybody is trying to navigate how to communicate with an older parent, why are they so stubborn? Why don't they just listen to me? They're being unreasonable. This is a great book to help put that in perspective. What we do when we work with seniors is first and foremost, health and safety. Trip hazards is number one. Also, where are you placing things in the kitchen? Like, your pans really down low, and even though it's really hard to bend down, our dishes overhead when it's hard to raise your arms up too high. So we look at a lot of ergonomic type of things, the real estate in any place that they're using, whether it's the living room and how they're walking through a hallway, what's down there, what's up there that might get in their way. That's what we look for. But for seniors, it's just like anybody else. It's about control of your space and making decisions that are good for you. And I don't know about you, Esther, but I don't really like it when anybody tells me what I need to do with my stuff.
Yes, it doesn't go even with one's husband or spouse.
Exactly. Doesn't go over so well. So that's the same thing when you're dealing with your parents or some other connection who's older. You telling them what they need to do is not the greatest way to do it. But coming in a little bit more subtly and saying, I'm concerned about this. Have you ever thought about whether this chair is really a good one for you to be sitting in? What do you think about it? And just listening before launching into you should get rid of that. You should not sit here or move here. You should not have rugs on your floor because they're a trip hazard. But asking and listening is a much more effective approach.
Yeah. And it takes patience, right? Because one can walk into situations, your situations, my financial situations with people, and go, oh gosh, oh my goodness, I would love to see it this way, because I think that would answer so many things for them and help put them at ease. But you can't rush it, because that's a very, you know, puts someone at lack of ease where they do feel, hey, you're trying to run my life. And how do you navigate that patience that's needed?
Right. It's interesting, because when someone's very concerned, you tend to think that you need to act. That concern needs to turn into immediate action. the sky is falling response is very common when you see a dangerous situation. Oh, we've got to take care of this right away. And it does take patience. It does take some mindfulness, right? To be aware of your own feelings, of how you're reacting to something you're seeing or perceiving. Nonetheless, you can build the skill of calming down, of taking it slow, of talking it through, of asking, would it be all right if we tried removing this rug for temporarily, not a permanent type of a thing, and asking permission rather than being super directive.
And I really appreciate that, especially around seniors or any of us. I know when my late husband passed away, and I think I've shared this on the podcast before with Eric, he had a room to himself and he was quite the collector. And he traveled overseas for work quite a bit, and he had a collection of his plastic iced tea bottles that he had brought home from Thailand and Singapore and all of these things, and just his different mementos of these journeys that meant so much to him. And when he passed, I really wanted to free up some space with that room for people who would be coming for his memorial, but I could not do this by myself. And I'd worked with an organizer before, actually creating a craft space for me in the house, which was great. And I reached out to her to say, could you help me with this? Help me with the clothes. And she was so gentle. And honestly, that was 7 years ago. And it's like a big filter. Each time I go through, there are still things I can't let go of. And so they just go in a box or boxes. They get put in a place, and then each year I've gone through, and each year I can say, okay, I can let go of this now. I can let go of this now. But can you talk a bit about how you navigate the estate, you know, closing of estate with people? Mm-hmm. You know, I work with the attorneys, I work with the financials, but there's the things, there's the home, there's the adult children to work with. Can you share a bit about how that process goes?
Absolutely. As an estate organizer, we sometimes are brought in to help manage what we call the tangible personal property from very beginning to the very end. And at the very beginning, it's a lot of unknowns. Even for your husband's room, you probably didn't know everything that was in there, right? He was the collector. That was his stuff. So there was a period of what we might call discovery, right? The exploration of, okay, what do we really have here? And in an estate, it's the entire house, all the nooks and crannies of the drawers and closets underneath the bottom of the dresser drawers, between mattresses and pillow cushions and pockets, all those things are potential hiding places of lost treasures or information. The file cabinet in particular, too. So we can work with families, trustees, probate administrators to do that discovery work. Sometimes we're providing merely strategy and tips and guidance and not doing the hands-on work. And other times we are there side by side or independent. It's really important for people to know that there's no prescribed time of grieving. And so the reason I say that is some people feel that they should just get started within the first few weeks or months after someone has passed. And maybe for some situations, that might be true. There's some financial pressures with reverse mortgages or other situations where there might be a reason that you need to clear a house very quickly. For the most part, that's not the situation. And many families need to take the much longer time before they can get into dealing with the personal property. So it's very individual. Even between siblings, it's very individual. Some siblings may be ready much sooner than others to tackle this, and that can cause some family tension. So it's important to strike a balance for the preserving the relationships between parties involved in clearing an estate.
Yeah, I can imagine that occurs here in Silicon Valley area, because I absolutely know this goes on in families where there may be one sibling who wants to stay in the house and live there because housing is very expensive, and another sibling or sibling, and they can't afford to buy the other ones out, and the other siblings want to sell the home because they want to be able
to... They want to realize the financial portion of that, or maybe they're just ready to break free of this whole thing. It might have been a painful family history. There's all so many reasons. And I guess the part of the good news on that is we have some great resources now for helping siblings financially manage that when someone wants to buy out the house and another wants to keep it. So I think there's some great tools, and you probably know much more about that than I do. But
share one.
Oh, boy. Well, I know in our, Esther, you and I are in a wonderful networking group, and there have been some wonderful lenders who are offering newer programs to basically use the equity share in the house as a collateral for these sibling loans. And so sometimes they can buy out a sibling without having to sell the entire house and just use it as a loan, basically, that they're paying back. So there's some great options that allow for a gentler resolution, let's say. So in the personal property, once the siblings or family members have discovered what's in the house, then it's the really hard situation of deciding what to do with it. And there's some great tools out there that I think families can take advantage of for this process. One is called Fair Split, and it is a website that allows the property to be inventoried, and that can include photographs and descriptions. And there's also a process for selecting. Each party can put in their priority preferences, and it's easy to distribute things fairly through that application. It's a fairly new application in the last few years, but it's been developing, and I find it very robust. When family's not involved, sometimes beneficiaries are charities, and that can make it very interesting because family and friends who might have wanted some items from the house suddenly can't because everything is now the property of the charity, who really doesn't want the tangible personal property. They don't want the clothing, you know, the costumes, the dishes, exactly, the furniture. They just want the proceeds from that. And so then hopefully items can be sold and any interested parties can purchase them from the estate. I'm in a situation right now where the family and friends are very disappointed that they didn't have a chance to go through and pick out their favorite items from a woman who passed away far too young, but her trust had indicated a couple of charities as the sole recipients of her estate. And so everything's going to be auctioned off. And then there's some things that can't be sold and those have to be trashed, but we don't really have a process for which family can even pick through what we would consider trash. Whereas, you know, somebody might say, oh, that broken chair, we can't sell it, but I could fix it. So it just makes things very sticky when we don't have our trust set up to really reflect what maybe our true values are.
And I think that's so important. It brings up the question of how much families can talk together before, nobody knows when they're going to go, but have discussions, or if they don't want to have discussions, if for some reason it feels uncomfortable, at least leave directions. Have you had either of those cases come into effect where someone left directions about who would get what, or they had the conversations with family? And were those effective?
That's, I think your last question is the key. Was it effective? Because conversations only go so far. What will supersede is any legal directive. So if the legal directive is in the trust that the charities receive the entire estate, then it doesn't really matter what conversations you've had. If the directions are that the executor gets to manage the distribution of personal property in a manner consistent with the decedent's wishes, it's a little bit more vague. And it's not specific about someone so gets a third and another person gets a third. It's just equal distribution. Then it's just a little easier to navigate that. And you are less likely to have conflict. When a professional organizer goes in to work on estate organization or distribution, it's really important that they follow the wishes of the or the directions of the trust or the probate order. And so we always require documentation of who is the trustee, what does the trust say about personal property, what are the probate orders, etc. And if anyone is working with property distribution and has not asked for that, I would be a little suspect.
Mm-hmm. And then the last thing before we need to close is just a quick thing. We talked about this before. We don't have time for a whole discussion about digital records and digital record keeping. Mm-hmm. But any recommendations? I ran into this with my late husband, David. You know, I lost his whole Apple iTunes because I didn't know his password for iTunes. And he had a ton of music there. Any recommendations for sharing passwords?
Oh, my goodness. The digital estate planning is the wave of the future, basically. Everybody needs that portion considered in their estate plan, but very, very few people are doing that or have done that. Having a statement in your estate plan about digital assets being transferred to the trustee would be a very prudent statement. We have trustees who are very worried about losing access to financial data, especially if there's digital currency involved, right? Which is only going to be a digital asset. And so being specific about that, or even having a pour-over will that states something about digital assets being in the control of the trust might be a good thing to talk about with your estate planning attorney. We do look for passwords, all those slips of paper that might be hidden on a desk or in a drawer. Those are all important because we don't know where those passwords are, when those passwords are going to be needed. I do recommend a password manager like LastPass or RoboForm, making sure that master password is accessible to your financial power of attorney person or trustee in the future. That would really help any estate management.
Well, Joan, thank you so much. We have to stop now, but the good news is, that's the bad news. The good news is that you will be sharing more with us in an upcoming podcast on navigating the separation of property during divorce, a very critical and emotional area as well. So before we close today, if someone needed to reach out to you, how would they do that?
You know, the best way to reach out to me is through my website, which is jmpoestate.com. JMPO is the name of my company, and just add an estate.com to it. We have a contact us page, lots of information about the various services we offer. And Esther, I think that if anybody wanted to reach me and couldn't figure out my website, they could do that through you as well. I'd be happy to share my top three tips for home and estate organization.
Oh, Joan, that would be great. I know we were talking before you came on how we also both need those as well. So if anyone would like to reach me, the best is my website as well, gatespassadvisors.com. Select contact me, and we're happy to get connected with you and talk about what you need in terms of your whole financial life and getting it better organized, gearing towards your own goals and future. So again, Joan, thank you so much. This has been great. I love this topic, as I said, and I look forward to more.
Thank you, Esther.
This has been fantastic. Joan, again, I just echo what Esther said. Thank you so much for being on. I look forward to learning more from you. I know that my style of organization of just buy more totes is probably not a good idea. And that's kind of the mode that I'm stuck in right now. Just buy more totes. They stack
nicely.
Let's
talk, Eric.
Okay. Off air, you and I need to have some therapy sessions, I think. Anyway, thank you so much for being here. Esther, of course, thank you for creating this show for this exact reason, educating the audience, helping people every step of their life. So thank you for doing that. And of course, our last thank you goes to you, the listening audience. Thank you so much for tuning in and listening to the Women in Wealth podcast with Esther Szabo. If you have not subscribed to the podcast yet, please click the subscribe now button below. This way, when Esther comes out with a new podcast, it'll show up directly on your listening device. This makes it much easier to share these podcasts with your friends and family. And if you think right now of a friend or family member, I know you know one that's messy, could use this podcast, you can send it to me because I could listen to it again. Anyway, thank you so much for listening today. For everyone at Gates Pass Advisors, this is Eric Johnson reminding you to live your best day every day. And we'll see you next time.
Thank you for listening to the Women and Wealth podcast. Be sure to subscribe to the podcast so you receive notifications of new podcasts as they become available. Check out the website at www.gatespassadvisors.com for more information. This content is developed from sources believed to be providing accurate information. The information in this material is not intended as tax or legal advice. Please consult legal or tax professionals for specific information regarding your individual situation. The opinions expressed and material provided are for general information and should not be considered a solicitation for the purchase or sale of any security.